Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on this Thursday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. So much football to break down in this second hour as week number two of the NFL season kicks off tonight in Miami, our first short week Thursday night football game of this season. And it's a good one, as they often are to kick off TNF. It's week number two in a divisional duel between the Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills. We will break down the game. We will look at the individuals that will impact the outcome. And we are expected to get a formal announcement in just a matter of moments about the Pac-12 maybe coming back to life.
Yeah, kill that. WAC-12. We don't want to hear anything out there. And by the way, Ben, they should have put that one out, what, Friday at 5 p.m. in a news dump. So hopefully nobody even questioned what was taking place out there on the West Coast. But we do have an exciting action pack hour number two. And you're right. It's a great game on a Thursday night. I was looking so forward to that Monday night football game between the 49ers and the Jets, because I just wanted to see that maybe a battle that maybe 5 to 6 minutes left to go in the game would still be in the balance. That wasn't the case. Hopefully we get those minds changed tonight and have a great performance, because we brought it up yesterday, Ben. Plus 180 price on both of these teams to win that division. The winner of this game is going to get a big leg up in the AFC East. So it'll be fun to watch it play out.
Very big leg up, because the Jets were the only team out of the four, and that includes the Patriots, to lose their season opening game. Mm-hmm. New York entered the year as a slight favorite in the competitive division that is at least among the top three teams, the AFC East, a division that Buffalo has won for four consecutive seasons. So not just a good week two, short week Thursday night football game, but a very significant one that will have ramifications for the entirety of these 18 weeks around the NFL. Let's get into the numbers for this game to kick off week number two tonight. Miami at home in South Florida, 2.5-point favorite against Buffalo. The total has worked its way down from where the number opened up earlier this week at 50.5, 48.5. DRS, we mentioned the weather, storms throughout the afternoon, some pretty nasty weather for a good majority of this weekend in South Florida, but expected to taper off a little bit by the time we get to kick tonight. A couple of showers, maybe not that strong of winds. What do you make of the matchup tonight between the Finns and the Bills?
And isn't that usually the key, Ben, right? We always talk about, like, there is rain that you worry about, but it's more likely if it's the rain and wind that really puts a damper on the situation. Now, granted, South Florida rain, a lot different than rain around the country, because it can come look like you're actually stepping out of a shower and can get soaked in a matter of moments, which can do a lot of damage to that football field. But let's play it out as if we don't get those crazy rainstorms tonight. It's a warm night, but again, you're not playing on a Sunday afternoon where the opposing team's sideline is 30 degrees higher than the home team because they sit them in the sun. Smart move for home field advantage. You won't have that in the night game. And also, the reason why you like sometimes Thursday night football games, Ben, earlier in the season, because you don't have the attrition. Let me tell you something right now. A first, second, or third week Thursday night game, hits a lot differently than a week 8, 9, or 10 when you're already into the season. Bumps and bruises, you can't heal up quickly. But even though we saw game number one, that backfield for the Miami Dolphins is banged up here. But here's the interesting part. If you looked at the final score, like let's just say the Arizona-Buffalo Bills game, you would have thought that Kyler Murray moved that football up and down the field through the air. That wasn't the case. I believe only 162 yards passing. And then you flip it over to the Miami Dolphins defense, which you say, okay, they're probably going to get into a lot of high-scoring tilts. Technically, last week it wasn't, but Trevor Lawrence, I think, also 162 yards passing as well. So the defenses last week that could be a little bit maligned, weren't really through the air. But this week, you're going to have to be ready for that, because I don't care what sort of pass defense you have getting ready for Tua Tagovailoa and those wide receivers, you're going to get beat up, because I thought the Jacksonville Jaguars defense was pretty good last week, only to find out Tua Tagovailoa throws for well over 300 yards, and Tyreek Hill at any time can hit those 80-yard touchdowns. So that's something to keep in mind. I still do think, though, Ben, that 48.5 is going to be susceptible to an over, because both of those quarterbacks, both of those offenses can be electric at times, but it's just interesting to see that they both held last week's quarterbacks at 162 yards, and they're both pretty good quarterbacks that they held that to.
The Bills game against Arizona at home did have a total in the mid-40s, 46 and a hook. It went well over. Part of that was game script dependent, right? Buffalo down 14-zip or 17-3 very early on. It got closer by the break, but it was a high-scoring affair, and the Bills needed to come back. Josh Allen doing a good majority of that. Allen, 4 total touchdowns on Sunday for Buffalo, 232 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air, 39 yards on the ground, 2 rushing scores as well. Miami also down 14-0 in the second quarter to Jacksonville, down by double digits at the half. They stormed all the way back, 338 yards for Tua Tagovailoa, and 80 of them coming on one play, a touchdown strike to Tyreek Hill. What's so interesting to me, Donnie, is when you look at the numbers for this game, we'll get to the totals in just a moment that DRS was discussing, but Miami's nearly a full field goal favorite at home, 2.5-point spread. We know how good the Dolphins have been when booked as the favorite side, expected to win a matchup under Mike McDaniel since he became the head coach in Miami since 2022. The Dolphins 18-4 straight up since the start of 2022 as the favorite. They are 9-3 against the spread since the start of last year. 9-2 ATS in 2023 did not cover as a 3.5-point favorite against Jacksonville. Miami, from the oddsmakers' perspective, is expected to win this game. But we know about Tua Tagovailoa's record against teams that are factoring into the playoff race. It's not great. Do you think Miami deserves to be the short favorite on this short week?
I do, because it's still one of the bigger advantages in professional sports to have that Thursday night football game at home, because, again, the away team is playing a game on Sunday. They're basically a day off Monday, walk through Tuesday, which is typically their day off, on a plane on Wednesday after another walkthrough, and playing on Thursday. So at least if you're the home team, you have more of that acclimation process, because you don't have to have a built-in travel day at that point. And also, you're the home team, you have the home crowd, it should be to your advantage. And we're not looking for upsets. Like, nobody's going to say, wow, I'm shocked that the Miami Dolphins are a favorite here. If you're giving 3 points away for home field advantage, these two teams are equal, and that's why we're expecting a great outcome. But I'm not shocked that the Miami Dolphins are the favorites here, somewhat healthy at the key positions, because running backs don't matter. We'll see. Yeah. If you can get Devon Achane to be 80% of what he is, that'll be just fine for a running back tonight.
Yep. The Buffalo Bills have won 4 consecutive AFC East crowns, starting in the 2020 NFL season, storming back last year to win their final 5 games, including the Week 18 regular season finale against Miami, to claim that 4th straight divisional title. In that span, since the start of 2020, Buffalo's only been booked as a dog 13 total times, 3 of them coming last year, even with Buffalo starting off just 6-6. They are 6-7 straight up, 7-6 against the spread as an underdog. That's where things are as of this moment. And again, Donnie, overall outlook for these two teams, both having to come back in their season openers to start this season 1-0. Miami over Jacksonville, Buffalo over Arizona. By the hook, neither of these two clubs covered in the season opener. But when you take the season-long perspective on Miami, on Buffalo, two teams we expect to factor into the playoff race, into the race for an AFC East crown, what is your early thought about both the Fins and the Bills?
It's interesting because the way we look at the game tonight, it's basically a pick 'em, right, outside of home field advantage. You see that graphic up there, the Bills at 10.5 and the Dolphins at 9.5. I think they're on a similar trajectory here. So if I'm looking to bet on either one of these teams, I probably would take the Dolphins because the pricing is better. 9.5 team wins here. Better to pricing here to win the AFC championship. Better pricing to win a Super Bowl than the Buffalo Bills. That's the only way I would lean. Now, again, this game, as we talk about, both of these teams plus 180 to win that division. This is a massive game. Yeah. You get the leg up in the division and the tiebreaker starting on your end. Now, if you're the Buffalo Bills and you go to Miami and steal a game early, you know Miami has to go up to Buffalo in colder temperatures, and you can get that 2-0 sure. sprint here, which would probably give you the division at that point. So it's a much bigger game for me for the Buffalo Bills than it is, excuse me, for the Miami Dolphins than it is the Buffalo Bills, just because you're home. You want to take care of business on your own field, and we'll see how it plays out tonight. But a good game nonetheless. We're expecting some fireworks. It should be a good one.
Next game between these two, week number 9 to start off November in Western New York. Plenty more coming your way next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We continue our deep dive into the start of week number 2. It is Thursday night football in this evening in Miami between the Dolphins and the Bills. DRS and the crew on Pro Football Today, or at least the Pro Football Today crew, will be live tonight on this Thursday for all of your in-game live betting needs for TNF. DRS, how excited are you to be back with the guys in studio just like you were on Monday?
Oh, it's going to be a good time tonight nonetheless, and sometimes you just dictate it on basically how good we expect that football game to be. So the expectations are high. I mean, there's times where you sit there on a Thursday night football game, week 11, week 12, like, what are we actually doing here tonight? We getting in? Who's the quarterback going to play? You got superstars all over the board in a meaningful game early in the season. The vibes will be extremely high. Same game parlays, in-game live betting. We'll have everything coverage for you there starting at 8:15 with the boys in studio. So yes, vibes are high. We're going to do very well tonight. I can feel it, and we'll watch it play out.
I can't wait to see what your in-game bets are for this one based on the pregame numbers and how it's expected to go. A quarterback battle between Josh Allen and Tua Tagovailoa tonight on this Thursday in South Beach. We start with Allen, who had 4 total touchdowns on Sunday in Western New York to spark that offense for Buffalo and lead the comeback. 244.5 his passing yards prop tonight, 37 in a hook on the ground. He was under through the air on Sunday, but over on the ground, and that anytime touchdown prop would have cashed twice technically as he had 2 rushing scores. Miami's defense against Josh Allen and Buffalo's offense. What do you expect?
It's going to be good here because, and the reason I want to bring up game number 1, he was everything to that offense.
Everything.
We know how the NFL works. If you are going to be everything as a quarterback, you might be nothing by week 12 because you're going to be banged up and on the injured reserve list. I don't know how you can run your offense just through your quarterback, but it felt like that was taking place. Now, we're going to talk a little bit later about some running back props that I think make some sense for the Buffalo Bills, but the ultimate running back prop seems like it's with Josh Allen. Did you watch that game? Like, they get inside the 5-yard line, and maybe the most unstoppable play in football, which used to be the tush push. It's like, okay, first down, we run Josh Allen on a quarterback keeper or a naked boot keeper, not even a naked boot keep, just run him on his own sweep. And it seems like he finds the end zone time and time again. And he's not one of those quarterbacks that shies away from contact. You saw him get beat up just a bit, which injured his non-throwing left hand. So I say to myself, if you're looking for a rushing touchdown, yes, I don't think Josh Allen in the middle of a play is going, I can run this in from 5 yards, but I don't know if I want to take a shot to my hand. Let me flip the ball out of bounds or try to throw it into the back of the end zone.
Right.
But I am a little bit more cautionary this week at handling that on a Thursday night where maybe the Buffalo Bills coaching staff is like, hey, Josh, love you. You're an MVP. Mm-hmm. You carried us back. You did what you had to do in a football game that we were behind 2 touchdowns. I get it. But live the fight another day. Maybe we call a little bit more handoffs in the red zone. But I got to tell you this, over 1.5 touchdown passes tonight on both of these quarterbacks. We'll get to Tua Tagovailoa as well. I really like that.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see the statistics from last week. Both of these teams, much maligned, I guess, coming into the season, whether it's injuries or question marks on the defense, they were very good pass defenses last week here. So something to look forward to tonight. Maybe these quarterbacks can't get off the way we think they will because those defenses played quite well last week.
Yep, we'll talk about Tua Tagovailoa right here, right now. Somehow, some way, Donnie, despite Miami only scoring 20 points, and it seemed like a very slow start in South Beach last Sunday against Jacksonville. You look at the numbers, Tua Tagovailoa ends up with more than 330 passing yards, 338 to be exact, and a touchdown, 80 coming on one play. It was the touchdown toss to Tyreek Hill, who broke away from the Jacksonville secondary. 268.5 is the number, more than 24 yards in front of Josh Allen tonight, or exactly 24 yards in front of Allen tonight. What do you expect out of Tua Tagovailoa to start off week number two?
I expect good things as well. And also, you're looking at some of those pass completion numbers and pass attempt numbers that might be going a little bit higher. Not because the expectations of a shootout and a total around 48.5, Ben. It's just a simple thought process that you say, let's just keep this simple. If Raheem Mostert is not there and Devon Achane is banged up a little bit, yes, Jeff Wilson is a capable back, but are we really handing it off as much as we maybe thought? And all you need to know is those lines are pretty sharp. It could be the difference, Ben, between one and two passes, which means cashing a bet or losing a bet. I'm expecting much more in the arm of Tua Tagovailoa, which is kind of funny. In week number one, it wasn't a high-scoring game against Jacksonville, but he easily went over the 300-yard marker. Because the one thing you do know, at any given time, a 75-yard, 80-yard touchdown pass is in that repertoire for the Miami offense. You saw it last week, down in the doldrums, down 17-7. Whoop, one play, 17-14, 80 yards, momentum completely flips here. That's the fun part about it. I do think that Buffalo Bills defense is not as good nearly as it was the past the 2 to 3 years, and you should be able to take advantage of that, which tonight, again, banged up running backs. I think they lean a little bit more into Tua Tagovailoa dropping back-wise. We still expect him to be, Ben, what, high 280s, 290s, approaching 300 yards. So I would lean towards the over, but I think there might be a little bit more dropbacks than anticipated just due to the running back room availability tonight for the Dolphins.
Yeah, the pass completions prop, 22.5, the attempts at 33 and a hook. In terms of the number, Tua Tagovailoa over this number in four of the first five games from last year. Good weather to start. Things are hot when September rolls around in the first few weeks of the NFL season. Again, the weather could dictate some things tonight in terms of game flow, especially some rain and wind, if that's what we see in some stormy South Florida weather on this Thursday night. Threw for 338 last week against the Jacksonville Jaguars, who did not have a great passing defense by any means a season ago, and ended up in the second half getting exposed in the secondary once again. DRS, when you look at the number again of 268.5 for Tua Tagovailoa, it's a number he went over in his first two home games of the year last year. Three of the first five for Miami a season ago were on the road. Their first two home games right from the jump to start 2024. Both teams only allowing 162 yards to each quarterback last week. Kyler Murray, .162 against Buffalo. Trevor Lawrence, after a great opening half, stalled out in the second as the Jaguars were shut out. Only .162 against Miami.
Yeah, both of these defenses actually played much, much better in the second halves than the first half. So that's also something to keep an eye on tonight. But it is a shorter preparation process. But the one thing you do like, if you're both coaches, you know the game plans. You know the styles of both of these teams. I'm interested to see what Joe Brady does on offense tonight. Again, a little bit banged up quarterback. Nobody's expecting anything different, because maybe you'd say if it was a broken finger or a broken or banged up hand on the throwing hand, maybe that's the problem for Josh Allen. Clean game tonight. Let's have some fun.
We'll talk about the playmakers up next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Let's look at the playmakers tonight and their props associated for Thursday night football in Miami to start week number two between the Dolphins and the Bills. There was a lot of optimism, DRS, this year in Buffalo out of second-year tight end from Utah, Dalton Kincaid. He is still the highest receiving yards prop player for Buffalo tonight, 42.5. But in the season opener for the Bills against the Cardinals, he had one catch on two targets for only 11 yards. It was the rookie wideout out of Florida State via Michigan State, Keon Coleman, the leading receiver for Buffalo on Sunday. Four grabs, five targets, 51 yards. We'll get to the explosive playmakers for Miami in just a moment. What do you make of Buffalo tonight, assuming the health of the Bills is in a better spot than Miami, at least the non-left throwing hand of Josh Allen, not expected a factor in this evening.
I do like over two touchdown passes here for Josh Allen. I think it makes a lot of sense. And again, we're looking at a total around 50. We're expecting points. Both teams probably to score at least three touchdowns. So that is a good look here. But also last week, Ben, my best bet on the Pro Football Today show on Sunday was Josh Allen to throw more than 1.5 touchdown passes, which again, it's two, and he got that. But you know the basis for that for me, Ben? It wasn't at the wide receiving core. Like, Shakir is okay, I get it. Coleman's a rookie coming in. Matt Collins is the third wide receiver. Yeah. Now, Shakir and Hollins caught both of those touchdowns. But if you ask me for my breakdown, I actually thought the red zone targets would be really high for the tight ends, and at least one, if not two touchdown passes, could have been to the tight end. So if I still keep that same energy this week and say it's a wide receiving core that I'm not all in love with just yet, I always like the two options at tight end. So if you're looking at Kincaid, that number should increase tonight. Those red zone targets should be there. He should be more active in the game plan. So I do agree with you. Keon Coleman, a couple catches last week, but it's still hard, Ben, to trust a rookie this early in his career. Yeah. Khalil Shakir, down the stretch last year, one of my favorite wideouts for the Buffalo Bills. But I do agree. Dalton Kincaid should be the lead dog here, and I'm looking for red zone targets with a legitimate chance to catch a touchdown.
Khalil Shakir right at this number last week, 42 yards on three grabs, only three targets. I will say, though, DRS, over this number of 40.5 in nine of the final 14 for Buffalo a season ago, including the two playoff games, having 44 in the divisional round against Kansas City. The reason you bring that up is because it's a new-look roster for Buffalo on both sides of the football. But for Josh Allen, it might take a little bit of time, at least for Keon Coleman, despite being the leading receiver, or Mac Hollins, despite catching a touchdown last week. Khalil Shakir is really the guy that remains from the Bills' wide receiver core of a season ago. Of course, now we go to Miami. Tyreek Hill, seven grabs, 130 yards, and a touchdown in week number one, despite being detained outside of the stadium in a scary situation prior to kick of the season opener. Jaylen Waddle, also a big game, as the Dolphins were moving it through the air in that second half. When you look at Miami, knowing that more than likely we're not going to see Raheem Mostert tonight, and we're not exactly sure of the availability or if he will be even near 95 to 100% of Devon Achane, what do you make of Miami's skill players on the outside?
It's kind of hard to gauge, because the one thing that you do like is, yes, everybody wants to take Tyreek Hill every single week. Touchdown prop each week. Yeah. It probably makes a lot of sense to do that. But sometimes those numbers betting wise, right? 93.5. So if you just slightly round that up, it's basically 100 yards, the anticipation. Do you think he can get there? Yes. But if you equate it to baseball, it's like, hey, I got a great pitch from the mound. Strikeout prop 9.5. Well, ooh, he's actually got to get to 10 here. There could be a lot of factors to keep him under that. Yeah. I do usually love secondary options, and maybe one of the best secondary options in the NFL is Jaylen Waddle, 65.5, much more palatable, right? Hey, 25 yards receiving at the half. He can easily get that in the second half with one catch. And last week, he did have one of those big catches. The same thing with Tyreek Hill. So tight ends for me completely out in Miami. Running backs too much up in the air tonight to take a guess and say, hey, Jeff Wilson season. Only to see he gets three carries and maybe two catches out of the backfield. Not good enough. You are going to zero in on Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Already love Tua Tagovailoa over 1.5 touchdown passes. So there, Ben. Somebody has to catch at least two touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. It's probably coming from the wide receivers. So instead of the yards for Tyreek Hill, which he can get at 93.5, I'd much more likely go with a touchdown catch for Tyreek Hill in that situation.
I would agree. Minus 130, not all that steep of a price for Hill to find the end zone. I loved Jaylen Waddle early last year before he was banged up week number three. First two games of the season, that secondary option, well over this number of 65.5, broke through the century mark, 109 yards on five grabs a week ago against Jacksonville. James Cook, 71 yards on the ground, but hard earned. He had 18 carries, one that went for 15 yards. So that meant 17 carries for 56 yards outside of the big bop, but three catches for 32 yards. I would look for Cook out of the backfield tonight in the passing game for Buffalo. College football talk next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
College football week number three on the horizon and starts with a banger tonight in the Lone Star State between Texas State and Arizona State. ASU, now a member of the Big 12. Texas State, a Sun Belt team. But there's a lot of realignment happening currently in college football. Donnie made official by the four schools that were reported to join the Pac-12 overnight. Boise State, Fresno State, Colorado State, San Diego State. All four schools coming out with the official announcement on this Thursday morning within the last 25 minutes or so. The Pac-12 is now six, and they are adding, starting in 2026, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State to join Oregon State and Washington State. The Pac-12, to Donnie's delight, has a little bit of life.
And the first thing they need to do, Ben, they got to go to San Francisco, get like, what, $3, $4 million, $5 million a month in rent fees there. You got to pay their new commissioner an extremely high amount of money because it worked so well for the Pac-12 last time around. Just don't make those mistakes here at this point now. Don't be frivolous with your money. I still don't think this conference is going to last at this point, but at least you have a clean slate at this point. But do you remember all that stuff, Ben, where it's like, hey, look, we look at the SEC, where they're at, we look at the ACC and the Pac-12 out here, those expenditures out here. And that company, American Express, boy, they were running up tabs out there in the Pac-12.
Yeah, they certainly were. A lot of bad decisions that plagued this once proud conference by former Commissioner Larry Scott. George Kliavkoff is the guy now. Also didn't have the greatest foresight in the 2 years since he took the job to see the collapse of his conference. But they pull themselves up by their bootstraps out there on the West Coast. They would still need two more member institutions to add on to the group of six to be considered a true FBS conference by the Football Bowl subdivision. We shall see. Anyway, let's get to week number three and some more key matchups on the horizon. We'll talk Thursday and Friday night a little bit later on in the show. Donnie, there's an argument that two of the best games happen on this Thursday and Friday night of this week three slate. Maybe not the best you'll see all Saturday long for all season long in college football, but a marquee matchup, at least based on program brand, in Madison, Wisconsin, bright and early on Saturday. Alabama makes the trip up north to the great state of Wisconsin to take on the Badgers inside Camp Randall. The Crimson Tide, 16.5-point road favorite in this matchup against the Badgers. Total stands at 49, and the Tide rolls north. What do you like in this game?
I think Alabama has a chance to roll in this. Now, the reason I bring that up is Tyler Van Dyke, no stranger to my television set. He used to be Tyler Van Dimes down for the University of Miami. Yeah. Here's the issue, Ben. Through two games, he's thrown for 406 yards, but the key indicator, only one touchdown pass. You're not just going to line up and play smash-mouth football, gets an SEC opponent. You're going to have to open it up. And for me, early in his career, Tyler Van Dyke was very good. Like, wow, maybe Miami found something. What they found last year was falling off of a cliff because of how bad that quarterback play was. He's now going to step up in competition. And also, the two wins for Wisconsin, not all that impressive to me. Milroe and Alabama rolling and absolutely smash Wisconsin on their home field.
Listen, I want to like Wisconsin in this spot. I want to think that one of the best home atmospheres in college football, Camp Randall and the Drump Around Boys, will be having a good day on Saturday. I just don't see it based on what we have seen out of the Badgers this year so far in two games and last year in year number one under Luke Fickell. Wisconsin is 0-2 against the spread this season, favored by at least 18.5 points in its opener against Western Michigan and last week against FCS opponent in South Dakota. Wisconsin has only scored 28 points at max throughout their two games this season, last year averaging 23.5 points per game in what was supposed to be the Dairy Raid. And new offensive coordinator Phil Longo that made North Carolina one of the most dynamic offenses in all of college football. Last year, DRS averaging 23.5 points per game, stagnant on that side of the football. It was the first time in the last decade the Badgers had averaged less than 24 points per game, and oftentimes in the last 10 seasons, more than 30 points per game. But that was a pro-style offense under Paul Christ, where the big hog mollies up front would dominate in the trenches. I thought it would take maybe a season to adapt to this much more high-powered, free-flowing Derry Raid offense under Phil Longo. And I thought Tyler Van Dyke, being the veteran, would be the guy to guide Luke Fickell and the Badgers to a better season. Hasn't happened. And then earlier this week, we heard from Phil Longo, the offensive coordinator in Wisconsin, somebody that follows me on Twitter, big fan of Longo and what he does. He was asked about why the offense has been stale so far, and he said something along the lines of, "I'm here to please Coach Fickell." Not necessarily why his offensive scheme is working. And Donnie, when you look at this Wisconsin football program, the Badgers have had a winning record each and every year since 2001, when all was said and done. They have the third longest bowl game appearance streak in the country at 22 straight years, only behind Georgia, who has 27, and Oklahoma, who has 25. But the Badgers have not won double-digit games since 2019. That used to be the standard in Madison. Has not been the case here. I think it's going to be very tough sledding for this Wisconsin team offensively to be able to even contain defensively what Jalen Milroe and the Tide are going to present on Saturday inside Camp Randall.
Yeah, and it does take some time because you're right. Wisconsin was always built on that dominant running game. And I remember under Barry Alvarez, the thing I used to get a kick out of was, you know, I can go out and get the best running back in the country because I can promise them 40-plus touches in every single ball game all throughout their career. And that was appealing to a lot of kids. That's not as appealing anymore because the running game is not appealing across college football. That's not necessarily how you win football games anymore. So there will be some growing pains as you step into the new millennium on offense for Wisconsin. But I did hear this. Like, you know me, Ben. I'm well-connected in the state of Wisconsin, and I heard through an SID out there that they are going to play jump around at the first TV timeout just to make sure there's still people in the audience out there watching and enjoying the football game. Because if they play it at, what, the end of the third quarter, what are we jumping around to? 42-3 Alabama? Tough scene up there, Ben. Tough scene. Play it early. Play it before the action even happens. Smart move.
For sure.
Love the best idea.
Donnie and his sources knows all about it. Tyler Van Dyke will always remember 2021 in Miami when he had a great season. It has not been great so far. His only averaging right now, DRS, somewhere around the 200-yard marker. He had 192 in the opener against the Broncos of Western Michigan, 214 yards against South Dakota. As you mentioned, just one touchdown in two games. Wisconsin has been to the red zone 10 times this year, only five touchdowns, all on the ground. SEC showdown and an SEC opener for the Bayou Bengals of LSU, but not for South Carolina. The Gamecocks last week on the road in Lexington, knocking off Kentucky 31-6 outright as the underdog against the Cats. It should be an electric environment inside Williams-Brice, where right now LSU booked is just shy of a touchdown favorite in Columbia.
Sandstorm going to be blasting, Ben. Have you ever get down to South Carolina and watch the opening? I mean, it would be pretty good to watch it play out. The crowd will be there. And also for LSU, they dropped their game opening night, which I thought they should have won, but USC had a very good night. And then game number two for LSU, which is typically one of those Brian Kelly's 65-0 shots. You see that final score and say, maybe not as dominant as we were in the past, but Nussmeier, 610 yards on the season, 8 touchdowns and 1 interception. It'll be interesting to see how that defense holds up for South Carolina. Because as you said, like, not really paying all that much attention to South Carolina. That's still an eye-opening number to rout Kentucky on the road and play that good a defense. Maybe they can hang around. Yeah. Maybe there's something to taking the points in this game with South Carolina at home.
South Carolina under Shane Beamer in SEC play. 13-12 now against the spread, winning outright 31-6 as a 9.5-point dog last week in Lexington. Held the Cats to 44 passing yards and won a game with only putting up 252 yards of total offense themselves. More around the NFL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You thought futures fusion, now that the regular season has been started in the National Football League, was done? No. It continues after week one, setting the stage for week number two on this Thursday night that starts this second week of the season. So, Donnie, Futures Fusion, a reminder for everybody out there, a category on the FanDuel Sportsbook to combine a couple of things in what would be a season-long parlay, and we like to do them comparing a couple of the bets against each other. Let's start with two teams expected to contend for conference crowns and maybe a Super Bowl championship this season. The Eagles to be the NFC number one seed and win the NFC. It's a 9-1 price. Or the Chiefs to be the AFC number one seed and win the Super Bowl. Take it a step further, also at 9-1. If you had to wager on one of these two bets, what would your Futures Fusion selection be?
Let's take a look at both of them, right? Because if you're lining these up, you first look at price point. They're both the same. 9-1 price, 9-1 price. So there's no just, oh, I'll just take the higher one and we'll flip a coin and go that direction. Now, also, let's take a look at what changes here. Each team supposed to be the number one seed, the Chiefs and the Eagles. But the changes on these bets, which differentiate it, one team just has to win the NFC, which means they show up in the Super Bowl and don't have to win it. The Kansas City Chiefs, we're asking them to show up in the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. So, again, as an Eagles fan, would love to make that bet at a 9-1 price. Do I think they're the best team in the NFC? No, I don't right now. So that would mean that they would get the number one seed by being the best regular season team and also throughout the playoffs being the best NFC team. I don't know if that's capable of that. Yes. I don't know if that's going to be the ending solution. But you've heard me, Ben, talk so much in the offseason about how good I think the Kansas City Chiefs are. If I didn't think they were a great team last year and won the Super Bowl, they improved their team this year. Why would I not think that they cannot be the number one overall seed in the AFC and win the Super Bowl once again, which would make it three straight times? So it's simple to me. I'm just going to stick to what I know when I was talking about in the offseason. Rooting for the Eagles, think they could be a quality team, but betting on the Chiefs and betting them to be the best team, that seems like a better feasible option to me. The 9-1 price I'm going with, the Chiefs to be the number one seed and win the Super Bowl. That's the fusion bet I'd make.
Yeah, DRS, it's hard to argue from the odds perspective as the Chiefs are favored in both of those categories. To be the number one seed in the AFC at plus 170 in front of the Texans. And KC has the highest win total in that conference, 11.5 at a overjuiced of minus 144. They are also the favorite to win Super Bowl 59, half a dollar in front of San Francisco. The Eagles are not the favorite in either of the two categories in their futures fusion. San Francisco is the favorite to win the NFC as of this moment, and San Francisco is the favorite to be the number one overall seed in the NFC, plus 230 for the Niners, more than half in front, plus 230, the Eagles at plus 470. So you slash that price in half and then take off 10 more cents. You get San Francisco with a pretty large gap in front of Philadelphia. And the Niners more than a dollar favorite in front of the Eagles to be that number one overall seed in the NFC. The Niners at this moment actually have the highest win total technically in the National Football League. 12.5 is the number. The under has a slight bit of juice. Again, KC 11.5. The over has more juice there at minus 144. So again, I do agree with the Chiefs, but I actually feel just based on my own pedigree that Philadelphia is my pick to win the NFC. So I like that component of it. Don't necessarily need the Eagles to be the top overall seed in the conference at the end of the regular season to make good on the second part of that equation. Next, Futures Fusion, and a fun one. NFC West teams to win 35 or more combined games. It's even money, plus 100. Or the NFC South teams to win 30 or less combined games at plus 110. Which side you choosing?
Yeah, we don't like math out here, Ben. The reason I bring this up is I don't know how many people are actually going to the FanDuel Sportsbook and betting either one of these, because when you look at it, like, okay, let's start with the first one. NFC West teams to win 35-plus combined games. So you're telling me I got to go through four different schedules and four different outcomes here and then grab a computer to decide to see which way I'm going to go. And then on the opposite side, the same thing. NFC South teams to win 30 or less games at a plus 110 price. Now, if we look at it optimistically, right, we do understand the teams with chances to win a championship, one of those at least resides in the NFC West. It's the San Francisco 49ers. They were tremendous on opening night. You say, you know what? That's probably a double-digit win team, 12, maybe 13 wins if they can stay healthy and Christian McCaffrey comes back sooner than later, right? Then you take a look at the NFC South and say, well, we know they might have the single worst team in the NFL in the Carolina Panthers. But sometimes you have to to do some, you know, little bit of math skills in this one. If we look at the NFC South teams to win 30 or less, that's really hard to do. Let's just take a look at the upper echelon of that division, which we just removed Carolina out, right? The Atlanta Falcons, I did have some decent aspirations for them this year, and I think they can win that division, and I still do. Tampa Bay looked good on opening day. Baker Mayfield, that offense looks solid here. And then you take a look at the New Orleans Saints, who maybe were the most surprising team of week number one, crushing the Carolina Panthers. So if you use those three teams, Ben, and say, okay, what's the average for them? Nine wins, right? Just the average I'm talking about between those three.
Yeah.
That gets you to 27 wins, which means I understand Carolina is supposed to stink. But 3-14 is so epically bad, but would still be able to cash that ticket technically towards the over. So for me, NFC South teams to win 30 or less games plus 110, I'm not betting that because I do think those three teams can account for 27. I just need three wins out of the Panthers, which I should get just by, you know, blindly walking or betting with them. So that NFC West team's 35 plus combined games at plus 100, I'm probably more likely to take that one than the NFC South teams to win less than 30 games. That's a crazy number.
Yeah, so I would agree with you, DRS. I actually think we will see at least 31 combined wins out of the NFC South. The good thing is they all have to play each other. And again, the Falcons' win total prior to the year was 9.5. The over had the juice. Now the under has the juice. But let's just say it's 9 wins for Atlanta. Tampa's win total, 8.5. The under has the juice. 8 wins, fine. New Orleans, 7.5. Over has the juice. 8 wins. We're talking 25. 25. Carolina gives you 5. There you go. And I actually think, kind of like what we saw, DRS, back in 2022, it's not going to be the Panthers bringing up the rear with only 2 wins, where you had a division where the Bucs won the title with a losing record, but the three teams that finished either tied for last or in second, depending on how you categorize it, we're all 7-10, where the basement is not as deep this year. Although Carolina, I don't expect to win 7 games necessarily. We have a little bit more futures fusion on the other side.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A Thursday night football-inspired futures fusion live right here on this Thursday on the Early Line. Again, we love the futures fusion on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Season-long bets combined together to form your kind of futures parlay, but we use two of them and compare them against each other. Now, the odds for the first two that we did, very similar. For the Eagles and Chiefs, it was both 9-1. For the NFC West teams having 35-plus wins, or the NFC South teams having 30 or less wins, it was plus 100 for the West, plus 110 for the South. These odds are very, very different. For the Dolphins to win the AFC East or the AFC Championship, plus 145. The Bills are the number one seed in the AFC or win the AFC crown is plus 470. So which way are you going?
Oh, it's a no-brainer. Even though, look, everybody wants the higher price point at plus 470, pays out better, right? But the Bills are the AFC number one seed or win the AFC title. You get two shots at that, right? So you say, okay, if I finish as the third seed, if I go in and win the AFC title, I can still cash that ticket. But I don't think the Buffalo Bills are going to be the number one seed because I already told you it's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. And even if the Buffalo Bills can finish like high up and get home field advantage, we saw that last year where the Kansas City Chiefs came into town and still beat them anyway. So it is a nice price at plus 470, but I'm not as high on the Buffalo Bills as I was in the offseason. And granted, this would have been a crazy one to ask if they had lost to the Arizona Cardinals on opening day, which they were down 2 touchdowns. I do give them credit for coming back, but it's not as if you came back against a football team expected to do a lot of things. Now you flip over to the Miami Dolphins. They are extremely talented. They're one of those top three teams in the AFC East with a legitimate chance to win that division. So if we're saying to win the AFC East and or the AFC title, you still do get two looks at that, because if you don't win the division, you can still make the playoffs and still make a run in the playoffs. But I do think the Miami Dolphins have a legitimate chance to win the AFC East, even though it's a lower price point, Ben. I'll go plus 145 and say, give me the two shots here at a much easier number.
It makes a lot of sense, right? You're specifically looking at one outcome for Miami. That's be good in the regular season, as you have been for the 2 years under Mike McDaniel, and win a division. That's it. That's done. You take care of that It's not Buffalo trying to win its division and have a better record than the Ravens, the Bengals, the Steelers, the Chiefs, whoever it might be, the Texans elsewhere in the conference, or when you get to the postseason and you compare those two prices. Now, what is interesting, Donnie, just looking at the numbers here in this moment, to win the division, the two teams are co-favorites, that the Bills and the Dolphins both at a plus 180 number. Buffalo has a much shorter price than Miami to win the AFC title, 7-1. Miami at 10-1. The Jets, another AFC East team sandwiched in between, 50 cents behind the Bills at plus 750. Now, here's the reason why I kind of like Buffalo's futures fusion more, but I would not bet it, because I'd rather just bet Buffalo to win the AFC at plus 700. Because I actually think that is the most likely outcome of all four. Buffalo number one seed, Buffalo AFC championship, Miami AFC East, Miami AFC championship. If I had to tell you which one I like the most, it would be the Bills winning the AFC title when all is said and done. The Dolphins haven't won a playoff game since the year 2000. And Miami had pole position last year to win the AFC East, had a very difficult schedule down the stretch against teams that would be in the playoffs, lost a ton of them, booked as an underdog in a ton of them, and Buffalo won five straight, including the regular season finale in Week 18, to take the AFC East for a fourth consecutive year. And if it's not just Buffalo, I still think the New York Jets are going to be fine in contending for the divisional crown as well.
Yeah, the Jets probably should pick it up this weekend and be at least 1-1. Then you're also going to see a team in the AFC East also be 1-1 because, well, two teams are playing tonight at 1-0. Somebody has to lose that game. And also, you might have a good argument here, too, at the back end of it. I don't like to take a look at other seasons, per se, Ben, like how long it's been since the Miami Dolphins have won a playoff game. The same way I look at the New York Jets, like, oh, they don't even make the playoffs, so how could they actually win the division? You want to take a look at this season in its totality. But it does feel like the Buffalo Bills, technically, would be better off in the playoffs than the Miami Dolphins. Now, granted, last year they were so injured and went on the road. But then anybody look at that game at Kansas City in the freezing cold, like, this is like the worst case scenario for the Dolphins. So when the Dolphins go on the road in the playoffs to colder conditions, or if the Buffalo Bills go on the road to colder conditions, who's more adept to probably handle that atmosphere? Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. And having said that, if Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills make the playoffs, that means that young wide receiving core really stepped up throughout the season. So they might be a better version of themselves by week 15, 16, and 17. So I can see it.
Miami's win total 9.5 overjuiced. Buffalo's win total 10.5. The under has substantial juice, but Buffalo still a peg in front of Miami from where the odds makers see it. Hour 3 up next here on the Early Line.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.